Happy Tuesday, and welcome to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. I don't know if it's just me. Maybe it's just how I'm going into it, but the world feels incredibly precarious and uncertain right now. And for many, many reasons, life is feeling really fragile and precious. And there's this kind of heaviness about everything around me right now. And maybe you're feeling that too. And so I decided that it's time for a much needed burst of joyous energy. And I have it for you today in this conversation that I've been saving for just the right time. It happened last summer, like many good things. It happened last summer backstage at Live Oak Music Festival with these beautifully gifted singer-songwriters, Liam Murphy and Ross Wild, who together are the self-titled folk duo Murphy Wild. I loved my time with them, getting to listen to their magical harmonies on stage, and then getting to go backstage and having a raucous interview with the two of them. And I've tried to save as much of the raucous as I could and still be allowed to air this conversation on the radio. But I'm sure you'll get the gist and the spirit of the experience that we had in our conversation. And I wanted to start today off by sharing with you kind of their sound so that you also could get that experience of how their harmonies and voices work together. So I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And you can be part of the conversation after the show by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook and leave us a message there. You can also find Murphy Wild, and that's Wild with a Y, W-Y-L-D-E, on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok. You can also listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org, or you can podcast this show to share with others or to listen at your convenience by visiting wherever it is you find your podcasts. Look for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and if you leave a review, that helps others find us as well. And then we'll be there for you to listen to for eternity. So to set the stage for my time with Murphy Wild, I'm going to give you a little sample of their sound and their perfect harmonies. And this is Angel from Montgomery, which they recorded live at the 9th Street Social Club in San Francisco. And I dare you not to sing along because it's infectious. I know that I did. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
I am an old woman named after my mother. My old man is another child that's growing old. If dreams were thunder and lightning was desire, this old house would have burned down a long time ago. Make me an angel that flies from Montgomery. Of an old rodeo. Just give me one thing, Lord, that I can hold on to believe in this living's just a hard way to go.
So here we are backstage at Live Oak Music Festival 2025. I am joined by Murphy Wild, who just finished up their set. Kind of a homecoming in an interesting way for Liam. And Ross, I guess your first time?
Third time here.
Okay.
Second time performing.
Yeah. Oh, then I missed you.
Yeah. Last time we were on the smaller stage on the,
yeah, the 8 a.m. morning show.
Yeah.
Oh, it was riveting. We woke up at 4 in the morning. We hiked over to the golf course because we didn't want to make up any of our camp
dates. So you could practice there.
Yeah, so we could warm up, you know, yeah. Sing some high notes.
All right, so we can't jump to the end. We have to go to the beginning. How did we get to the place where Murphy Wild is on main stage at Live Oak 2025? What's your origin story? Mm. We'll start off by introducing yourselves.
Go ahead, babe.
I would start with, I'm Ross Wild. I'm originally from the Bay Area. I've done a lot of solo stuff prior to getting together with Liam. And when we met Liam, it was just kind of natural and things fell into place because we liked the same artists and both played folk guitar and stuff like that.
How did you meet?
1, 2, 3. Tinder! We met on Tinder.
And for those who don't know, what is Tinder?
Tinder. Yeah. Oh, it's a beautiful thing. It's a dating app where you swipe left and you swipe right, depending on if you like the person or not. And I swiped right on my lover, Ross. And when we met, I was living in Quincy, California at the time, a small mountain town in the Sierra Nevada.
And how did you grow up in San Diego?
Grew up in San Diego.
Ross is in San Mateo.
Yes, how did we get there?
Right.
Yeah.
Why are you in Quincy and then where were you?
I was actually in Reno. Okay. I had just graduated and I was living with, my folks had moved to Reno when I graduated middle school. And I was living in Reno at the time and on Tinder, the radius of people available increases it when you don't have any, like, here, you tell a story.
Yeah, and I was just one of the three gay men in my county, and so, like, after a little bit of swiping, it took me 100 miles away to Ross, and then we've been in love ever since.
And how long ago has that been?
It's only been almost 3 years.
Yeah, almost 3 years.
You almost said only.
Been almost 3 years. Okay. Oh, only 3 years isn't like it feels like we've been together for a lifetime.
Yeah. or it feels new because 3 years is a legitimate
3 years
amount of time
a lot.
To be together.
Yeah. Yeah, and 3 years in gay is like 15
is it
years.
Long,
yeah. Yeah, it's
now so you start talking about opening things up.
Right? For the longevity's sake.
Yes, I've heard that before. But you have music, though, at the heart of your relationship. And did you know that when you swiped? Or did you not know that about each other? I don't know how it works because you don't have a profile.
You do have a profile.
Okay. Yeah, we saw pictures of each other playing guitar.
Pretty much just like there were some guitars in the pictures. But then once we set up a first date, I got access to Ross's Instagram. And I remember while he was driving, he had this cover of Leave It on a Jet Plane on his Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I just was listening to it in my headphones. And I just started harmonizing to it on my own. And I was like, oh, we sound really good together. I was like, this is fun.
And it was before you'd even met in person?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. And then I made like a little arrangement in an hour. And then like, I think like on date number four, I was like, can we sing Leave Me on a Jet Plane? I made an arrangement.
Did you have to admit to having stalked his profile?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I think we both did. Yeah.
You were stalking me too.
Yeah, you did some incredible stuff on yours. Yeah. And then on our first date, we just bonded over like artists that we mutually loved, like, and some of them were artists that we only thought we like, Connie Converse and Nick Drake, and like those are not really popular artists these days, and it's just really cool that we bonded on all that and we loved those artists and could sing their songs together. Mm-hmm. And it was a beautiful thing. It felt right.
Were you pursuing music before the two of you met, Ross?
Yes, on the side of other things, because I went to business school and so I was kind of working on my career at the same time, which is tough to do. And but I was definitely doing music on the side and doing gigs here and there.
He made two albums in college.
Yeah. Oh, you did?
He was touring around with it. Yeah, he was doing really good stuff.
Yeah.
Where did you go to college?
Santa Clara University.
No, yeah. Wow.
Yep.
And so did you have like a whole following in your college community? And
yeah, it was a fun time. Yeah, Santa Clara is a good school, but it's not great for like music and art though. Mm-hmm. And he went to Berkeley, and that was, sometimes I get jealous. Berkeley sounds like a wonderful artistic school, and but it was good. And the Bay Area is, of course, a fantastic place to come into your own as an artist.
I mean, yeah, you had so much. Ross was infamous for, he had a little white motorcycle, and he would ride it around town with his guitar in his backpack, and people got so excited when they saw him by. It was like a clown on a unicycle.
I so love that you know the stories with such passion. Yeah. It's really beautiful.
We finished each other's
sandwiches. And so, Liam, what's your introduction to music? When were you pursuing music in Quincy? When you met?
No, not really. I came to Quincy because I studied forestry at UC Berkeley, and
but your parents were thrilled with that choice.
Oh, it was fun.
Yeah, I bet it was great.
No, it's because
but it's not a Berkeley-esque, I think, sort of major, is it?
No, not necessarily, but they've got this the most incredible program for it there, because they have this research station in the middle of the Sierra Nevada in Quincy.
Oh.
And every summer, you go out with your entire class, mm-hmm. and you stay there for 8 weeks. And the tests are sort of like you're walking with a professor, and at any point, he can say, what is this plant? Scientific name, common name, and a use of the indigenous people. And
oh
you always
goodness.
Have to have note cards in your pocket. And like those were our tests, and I've never learned something so in such a short amount of time.
Yeah.
And so in the middle of the Sierra Nevada, there was just random UC Berkeley population, because people fall in love with the town and end up moving there.
Right,
and
that
so
makes sense.
I was there just pursuing forestry, and my music sort of just came from growing up at Live Oak, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I've been to Live Oak every year since I was 9 months old, and kind of was just always doing the talent shows and jamming out with the family, and
Do you have a musical family then? Is that your... Did you learn from your parents and your grandparents?
A little bit. My brother and sister play like piano and violin,
mm-hmm.
But nobody in the family like really stuck with it that much. In fact, I like auditioned for a musical for the first time when I was in seventh grade,
mm-hmm.
for Willy Wonka, and my parents were so mortified that I was going to be just like atrocious on stage. And apparently, they told all their friends like, "You don't have to come." Like nobody thought that I'd be able to sing or anything like that. So it kind of came as a surprise.
Did it surprise you though, or did you always know you had it?
I used to like sit in front of my computer on iMovie and record myself singing. Those recordings still do exist somewhere of me, like, 8 years old,
did
singing
you post
Gavin
them
DeGraw.
To YouTube?
No, I didn't. They were just for me. I suspected that, like, maybe singing would be fun, but I don't think I really knew that, like, I could.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just fun.
For you. So you meet... there's so many other things I want to talk about, because Berkeley is such an interesting choice for school.
Yeah.
And you would think that you would have gotten full into the music scene being in Berkeley, but
totally.
Super music-centric. But you didn't... You were... Doing the forestry
well,
thing.
Well, I wasn't an acapella group.
Okay.
It's Multitudes.
Yeah, what was it called?
Artists in Residence.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like Artists in Residence, but like Resonance.
Oh, I get it.
Classic.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, it's clever.
Play on words.
Food.
And fast forward, you meet each other. How does your life change, Ross, in the last 3 years? How are you different than you were prior to meeting Liam?
Well, I would say artistically, I originally, before I met Liam, I thought of myself as a solo artist. Like I was never really great in bands.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't honestly a very good collaborator.
You don't share well.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. Yeah, and then when we met, it was really slow. We didn't really jump right into music together. We kind of built
mm-hmm.
our relationship first, which was really important, I think. And then
mm-hmm.
we explored our musicianship after the fact, and since then, I mean, I like writing all of our songs and stuff, and writing together. It's been a very beautiful process, because I now collaborate with someone, and that someone is a person I love very much. So it's very interesting. And I don't do much solo stuff anymore, but. I get it's a very good outlet for me at the same time, which is good. Yeah.
What about the building of the relationship part? What was it that drew you to Liam? What and were you looking for a long-term relationship?
Famously, you were.
In my bio, it said, yeah.
What does it say?
In your Tinder bio, it said, not looking for something serious right now.
Ross has his face.
Yeah.
For everyone back home, Ross is red as a tomato.
when we were on our first date, I immediately said to myself this is an exception, and this is an exceptional person.
Oh.
And and I could tell immediately that we had something special between
mm-hmm.
us, even though we didn't jump into music right off the bat, I could tell we were into the same stuff, we were into very similar vibes, and that we complemented each other very well. Yeah.
I love that you settle into this serious part of you, that business part of you comes
totally.
Out
totally. Yeah, 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 absolutely.
It's like you start off kind of like
adorable.
This joyous, here's our story, and then we're very
and then we're
I like that. I like your codes. You're switching.
And then also, I feel like we can tell them the tea. You know what I mean? But we did match on Tinder a year prior than like going on our first date. But I identify as like really struggling with texting, and so we didn't.
He didn't respond.
I didn't.
Liam didn't respond.
You didn't respond to my text, Ross. So
no, actually,
Oh, that was you too.
It was me. See, I identify as bad at texting. No, seriously,
because I thought you were both ghosting me. To be honest,
no.
Oh my God.
We would never do that to you. We would never.
I experienced your bad texting, basically.
No, you did, but like it just means that like we're getting close.
Okay.
It means that you're family. It means that you're family.
Thank
you. I mean, like I don't respond to my lover.
So you matched a year before.
Yes.
And you just never followed up on it?
Never felt?
He didn't. On it.
So was it hard for you to take the second shot?
No, because he responded and we hit it off right away.
The second time.
Yeah, the second time.
Yeah.
A year later, he responded to me and it worked out really well. And we bonded on Redwoods, on music.
Yes. Yes, yes.
Our love for Montgomery Woods in Mendocino, California.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did it surprise you how easily your relationship came together?
I think, like, as soon as Ross walked through the door and the first time I saw him, and then, like, by the time we had our first conversation, I was like, oh, duh. I was like, well, this makes sense.
Yeah.
I was like, if this is what I was waiting for, then yeah, that checks out.
I hear that a lot from couples who've been together for a long time, you know, that kind of origin story piece, and they'll say, I saw them, and I went, oh, there you are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah. There was not a surprise. It's not a ton of bricks. It's just like, yes. And now we carry on from here.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It wasn't like getting hit in the face and falling. It was just like a moment of clarity.
Yeah.
A deep breath.
It's kind of like writing a good song where it just comes out of the sky.
It's
cheesy, but it's true.
That's good.
But it's not cheesy. It's not cheesy because isn't all music an expression of love of some kind?
Yes. Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Always. What were you expecting from this relationship? What was it that you found intriguing about Ross?
I mean, I think there were too many... I think there were just... There were too many synchronicities to ignore. And, of course, like, you know, we shared the same music taste, and we loved to do all the same things, and we loved to hike, and there was all, like, the surface level stuff, but the thing that really got me...
Yes, yes.
...was... Ross mentioned this place earlier called Montgomery Woods.
Yeah, I don't know it.
It's this beautiful redwood grove in Mendocino County, and there is a hidden albino redwood tree.
Okay.
It's this really rare thing that happens, just like when a redwood can't produce chlorophyll, it sort of grows like a bush, this white ghostly bush that's totally a redwood, genetically it is. And like you kind of have to know where it is. It's like this like little secret.
And Montgomery Woods itself is not very popular.
Right, because I'm a lifelong Californian and don't know that.
Yeah. Exactly. And when we were texting for the first time, one of his pictures in his profile was in Montgomery Woods. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, hello. And we kind of started talking about that. And I was like, here, like, take this pin. It's this, like, really cool secret albino redwood. Nobody knows about it. And then Ross just responded with a picture of him next to it. And I was like, oh, shoot, sign. That's a sign if I've ever heard one.
This is crazy. Okay, so let's talk musically then, because all these synchronicities and you come together. Mm. Are you together because the universe wants you to make music? Or are you together because the universe wants you to be together?
¿Por qué no los dos? You know what I mean? It's a fun thing to figure out, because being in a band with your partner, sometimes you don't know whether you need to have like your business partner hat on or
it's tough.
Yeah, your business hat on or your relationship hat on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you really need to make sure you're treating each other tenderly. Because like sometimes like in rehearsals, it'll be like, hey, like, what if in this song we, like, go back to the sea? And it's like, well, I see that you didn't do the dishes last week. And things get really tense. But, like, the more we, like, work together, the more we're comfortable with feedback from the other person and getting rejected from the other person and, like, understanding that, like, oh, maybe if, like, you know, if Ross doesn't like the song that I bring to the table today, it's not a rejection of,
right.
of me and our relationship. We're just, like, we're making art together.
Yeah.
And it's fueled by a lot of, you know, sometimes relationship turmoil, but a lot of relationship triumphs.
Yeah.
You know, just like everybody else.
A lot of good song material, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. What's the first song you wrote together?
What would that have been? Oh, Mosquitoes, probably.
Mosquitoes.
By Sierra Boy. Mm-hmm. We do this thing because we do still write songs separately, mostly, and then we'll bring into the table and it'll then... we'll rearrange it or write new lyrics, and the other person can give their feedback. And one of our early songs was Mosquitoes. Liam wrote Mosquitoes, most Mosquitoes, and then I had a different song called Hi Sierra Boy that we kind of just decided to tack on to Mosquitoes.
Cause just it happened to be in the same key and everything. And
a good continuation of the story
as well. So now it's sort of like our overture. We always start the show, start the show with it.
Yeah. That's a good overture.
How's it start?
One, two, three.
Mosquito. Mosquitoes on...
Mosquitoes on the river shore can't bother me. Pesky as they are, I'll never go. And then it's a metaphor. The mosquitoes are a metaphor for our relationship. Because it's like sitting on the river shore, but you're in such a good mood that the mosquitoes can't even bother you. Mm-hmm. Sort of like about holding two truths in one space. Like, yes, there are mosquitoes here, but the sunset is so gorgeous, and the two things can exist at the same time. Mm-hmm. Just the same as, like, we can totally fight, and our relationship can still be beautiful and worth it.
Yes. You know? Well, it's a key to healthy relationships. You have to have conflict.
Yeah.
Because you start building up scar tissue, and conflict clears the scar tissue.
Mm-hmm. As a therapist, for you in a relationship, what is the difference between... healthy average conflict and something that can eat away at the soul?
I'll tell you I'm gonna tell you a big truth. I've been with my husband 45 years since I was 19. I had our 40th wedding anniversary last month.
Congrats.
And this is what I tell my students and I tell my clients: we fight like irresponsible children. We say shit to each other.
Totally.
We don't hold back, and then it's done. And then it doesn't get revisited. But that we fight about 45 years now, we fought about 45 years ago. And so you have to make a conscientious effort. It's like, there's things that you're never going to fix, that you're not going to agree on. Mm-hmm. And as long as they're not deal breakers, right? Things that you can't live with, then they just become noise in the background. And when you're spending good time together, none of that bothers you. Mm-hmm. But we work really hard to keep that fun times together really active. And not much bothers us. So that's my key to success. The relationship flows. Love flows. Mm-hmm. And if you have to stop and we're going to think about it, you start to get mired in the muck.
Mm-hmm. Whenever, like, we're dealing with stuff in our relationship, like, we both, like, will make a really conscious effort to, like, okay, if you're having doubts, if you have a problem with something that's happening, like, we are the first people that we talk to about it. And like even before my therapist or my best friend in the world, like, I am not going to, like, bring other people in without, like, consulting each other
first. Because this is sacred. That bond is sacred. And people don't realize how easy it is to break them.
It's
really easy.
It can be really easy to talk about your partner.
Yes, or to talk to yourself about your partner. Because I also will say to my students, I get up every day and I look at my rings and I remind myself I choose to be in this relationship. Because I could wake up every day and go through the list of things that bug me.
Yeah.
And both are equally as
a choice.
No, it is. Yeah. And I think people think that love is some magic thing that just you either have it or you don't. No, love, and you guys... you know this, you have to choose it every day, because it's just as easy to hate someone's guts.
Totally.
They're on the same side of the spectrum.
Exactly. And, you know, like, I always...
and now we're going off... I just want you to know that we're going off...
I love it.
I just don't want to take your time about things that...
We're so into this.
Okay.
Because, I mean, like, we aren't a couple, and, like, I think we never want people to think that, like... I don't want to present the front that it's like, we're the cutesy folk couple, and we like, and we sing and we dance and we have so much fun. We do. We also fight. When we fight, we totally fight.
The room's maroon.
Yeah.
That's a line from
that's a great line.
Yeah. But I think when we first got into a relationship and people were telling us that, like, you know, relationships are hard work, I was like, well, you know, that doesn't really sound like so much fun.
No.
You know, because I kind of had this mindset where it's like relationships are hard work, like 9 to 5, like you go to your job, until like, you know, being with each other after a while, we sort of realized that like, okay, relationships aren't hard work like a 9 to 5. Relationships are hard work like a painting,
yes,
or a song, yes, or something that fills your soul up, you know?
Yes. And it's a choice.
Every day.
Because, you know, in 45 years, and your parents seem to have been married for a long time.
Yes. High school sweethearts.
Yes. So that's like Chris and I. It's a choice you're making all the time to be in the space, because at the end of the day, nothing else matters as much as that. And so you have to let go of a lot of things you might have wanted to do. Like, we look at our friends who, you know, well, I wanted to pursue this, or I wanted, you know, there's a lot of things we could have done in our life as solo people.
Yeah.
But we let them go to build this.
Yes.
And that's a conscious choice too.
Exactly.
Because people think you can do all things.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And like, you know, just as you choose the relationship every day, you could have chosen one of those things.
That's what I'm saying.
At any point down the road.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And oh, and one more thing. Then I'll go back to you. Every year we have a couple times a year that we do do we want to do this anymore check-in. Mm. So our anniversary is traditionally, every year it's like the one free day that you could say, I don't want to do it anymore, and no harm, no foul, you walk. And every year it's like, do we want to do this again?
Being in a long-term relationship, also, I don't know anything, we are babies, but, yeah, but like,
but are your parents still married?
Yeah.
Yeah. You have a giant leap over most couples.
Sure.
Because you in with legacy marriages, and when you see something done well, or not even done well, but done, that gives you a huge step forward.
Yeah, I mean, just like being in a relationship brings so much to the surface. Really makes it so that you can't stomach anything inauthentic, like within yourself,
yes,
you know?
Yes.
Like, there are so many things in our relationship where I was like, gosh, there's something about this relationship that is not right because I'm so mad and we're having all these problems. And I was like, oh boy, I need to look inward because a lot of these problems are coming from within.
Yeah, it's like having a mirror with you all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes, you really and see you yourself. Can't hide.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's always that check-in too. Like, if I'm not feeling this, does that mean we're falling apart? Or, you know, am I bringing my actual true self to this, or am I faking it? Because, like, nothing's worse than faking with the person you're sleeping with, for me.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right? If there's times I feel like we're not in sync, it scares the crap out of me. Because all of a sudden I feel like I'm in bed with a stranger.
And sometimes it's like, does this mean something? Does this have a deeper meaning?
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Or is it just a bad day?
Sometimes exactly.
Sometimes it's the dream is about a pizza you ate.
Mosquitoes on the river shore can't bother me. Pesky as they are, I'll never go, go, go. Oh, how the sun slowed my respiration. It made these pesky skeeters feel like home. Burnt up trees don't get me too down, but Lord, do they make me think twice? I'm still walking on a feet, happy as a redwood. We're sprouting all nice, that's right.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you're listening to Mosquitoes, performed by my guests, Liam Murphy and Ross Wild, known as the folk duo Murphy Wild. And they mentioned the genesis of the song Mosquitoes, so I thought you'd enjoy hearing a bit of it. I had the honor of hanging out with Murphy Wild backstage at Live Oak Music Festival 2025, and I thought today was the perfect time to share their story and their music to uplift our day, but also in preparation for Live Oak Music Festival 2026 that supports our station, Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. This is Murphy Wild and A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. All right, so let's talk about the music part.
Yeah.
So what is the, are you planners? Like, are you thinking, here's our steps to where we're going musically? Are you that, because you're the business guy, Ross.
Interestingly enough, in terms of like music and you know the structure of writing songs and rehearsing and stuff, that's mostly Liam's wheelhouse. I'm I used to just kind of go up on stage as a solo artist and just kind of perform and improvise and just like not really rehearse too much. Mm-hmm. But when like in doing harmonies and such and doing really tight choreographed guitar licks and stuff, it's really important that you rehearse a bunch. And so Liam is really good at like making me do that. And
then, that's my acapella experience.
Yes, yes, boot camp. And so, yeah, much more work goes into, you know, a band and a duo versus like a solo act. And, that's a cool thing to be a part of. Yeah.
But so what is, I'm going to rub this window. Sorry. Yeah. What is the, because did you start performing together with someday we will headline, you know, Sierra Music Festival?
Sure.
Did you go into it with that, or is it like, hey, this is fun?
Oh, it would have been so much fun. Yeah, it would have been too devastating. If we didn't make it, it would have been too devastating to fail at that dream. So I usually go into things, artistic things, with just like, I'm doing this for myself. Mm-hmm. And then if it leads somewhere, then so be it. And that I've always been happy with that. And I don't know, it's better for my mental health.
Key point. What about you, though, Leo?
I think we were just having so much fun, like, showing off to our families. Never really, like, one day we will be, like, the major headliners. I mean, we will do music for as long as people want us because, you know, we've kind of got the bug. And mm-hmm. once you've got it, you got to do it. Mm-hmm. And we're just loving it. But we kind of got to where we are now just in doing those little things for our families that meant so much for us. For example, we got booked at Live Oak for the first time last year because the year prior, we were just jamming out in our campsite with our festival family. Mm-hmm. And Marisa Waddell, the woman who was booking the festival lineup, was walking by, sat down.
That's how this starts?
Yes. She sat down and then watched us rehearse for an hour. We didn't know who she was at the time. And then like 6 months later we just got an email being like, I was there at the campfire and then offered us a hot lick show. But I think, you know, sticking to events and venues that we really identify with and really believe in, like Live Oak, that like really makes us feel close to our family and our identity, like it's kind of where we're at right now.
Do you have day jobs still, or is this your full-time life?
So I quit my job 3 weeks ago.
Oh, this is new.
Yes, I was working for a wildfire mitigation organization mm-hmm. for about 3 years. And then right now I'm doing a grad school program at UCLA, Geospatial Information Systems and Technologies.
That sounds giant. What do you do with that?
It's like essentially, they call it the science of where. It's map making, oh, it's geospatial so processing cool. and database management. But I call it tree tech because okay. it's like all the tools you can use in the 21st century for forestry. But,
so it's extending your education where you started.
Yes, exactly. But a bit more on the tech side. But I'm only enrolled part-time and the rest of our time is dedicated to music right now. And we're hitting the music festival circuit pretty hard this summer.
We're going to try to record some more songs too.
Yeah.
Get in the studio, get in our makeshift studio with our tape deck and, mm-hmm. and make some songs. Yeah.
So do you, is this your full-time job right now?
No, I actually work for a food co-op in Quincy. I do it remotely because it's in Quincy and we're living in Mendocino now. But
near Montgomery.
Near Montgomery. Yeah, and so I'm doing that remotely and it's a part-time job, so I have enough time to work on music and rehearse
yeah.
and travel.
We're gonna hit it hard this summer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then if we're not absolutely famous musicians by the end of the year,
it's really hard to like be musicians and kind of, you know, really dive into that dream and also have a job to sustain yourself. It's really tough. And it's almost kind of like you have to choose whether you want to, you know, build your career or kind of just dive straight into art, to your art. And being in the middle ground is kind of, it's hard because you might not make it as an artist or in your career. And so you kind of have to choose. And I feel like we've taken a break kind of from, you know, our careers at this yes. moment.
As of now, we are in our drop the safety net era, you yeah, know, yeah. pretty much as of this month.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. But really not giving yourself only 6 months.
Oh, no, yeah. Yeah. We'll do a lot more.
It scared me a little bit. I was like, oh, that's a pretty steep climb.
We're doing a farewell concert in December. Yes, right?
And then a documentary. Yeah. So what kind of songs are you writing these days? What is coming through you? How has your music changed?
For me, it changes just in accordance to who I'm listening to and who inspires me. Like the best time for me to write is after I hear something really inspiring. Like when I hear an artist that I really like. I've been really into Elliot Smith recently, and I've been writing some songs that kind of I feel like after listening to him.
Like almost homages and so in a weird way? Or is that
more to, yeah, more just like the a mood that okay. I'm in. Like he puts me into a mood, and he almost puts me into a mood of like I wish, you know, I almost listen to one of his songs and I'm like, I wish I wrote that song. And it's like I go and try to write not a song like it, but just a song that I'm proud of, mm-hmm. and that really helps me, that inspires me. So just listen to other artists, and there are other artists, but Elliot Smith has been the main one. And so yeah, I think, yeah, I'm trying to write more stuff with cooler chord changes, and I used to write just, you know, G, C, D songs, yeah. and now I'm trying to bring more color into it. Musically, yeah. and that's been fun.
And we honestly write very differently.
Mm-hmm.
Like in some ways we're like almost on opposite parts of the spectrum. So when we like come together to work on a song, sometimes it's really uncomfortable and everything you pitch kind of feels bad.
Mm-hmm.
But then we kind of realize that like since we have such different writing styles, if we find something that we both like and can both get behind,
you know, it's going to be great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we can really stand behind mm-hmm. it when something like that.
So how are you different than in your process of writing?
Different, I'm not sure. I just know like our styles are different. I'm very like a stream of consciousness type of writer, I guess. I think it's tough for me to write about something if I'm like still processing it, but like when I get these like big moments of clarity or relief and I can like see a situation as a whole, then usually in those moments I'm like, oh, like reach for the guitar and something pretty fun comes out. But I feel like you're really good at writing like as a tool to help you process, you know, when you're going through something, like yeah. you are really good about writing about being in the muck and stuff.
Yeah. And it might, and the song might not necessarily be about being in the muck, but it's, they're usually dark. I think I probably write some darker songs than you do.
Yes.
Just on average.
Yeah.
And, which is cool. Cause we have, it's kind of a good yeah. dichotomy.
We always say Liam writes about forests and sunsets. Ross writes about inner turmoil. For some reason, it makes sense together.
Because nature is a brutal place.
Oh, yes. Heck yeah.
That should be the punchline.
Yeah. So how has music influenced your mental health?
Oh my gosh.
That's a good question.
That's a really good question. I couldn't live without music. I've always thought about like if I, for some reason, I lost my hands or mm-hmm. something, and I couldn't play guitar or something, I would be just completely devastated. But it's like Liam said, I think it's definitely a way to process for me. Like me writing songs is a really handy tool for me to feel things that I didn't know I had to feel, and that's really helpful for me.
Totally. There have been some songs where you wrote it and after like looking at the lyrics together, like maybe daylighted like some problems in our relationship or problems that we were going through, and like you didn't even realize what was happening when we were looking at the song, but after looking at the lyrics we were like, oh shoot, you know what, there is something we need to talk about, and you know, led to beautiful conversations. So pretty grateful.
Did you struggle with mental health issues when you were young?
Yes, yeah, I've struggled a lot with mental health issues, but I've been doing better for like a couple of years, but music has always helped me there, and the more I'm focused on music, the better I feel usually.
Yeah. How old are you?
26. Okay. Yeah.
So you just entered adulthood, really, last year.
Yeah, yeah, my brain just developed.
Yeah,
I think... prefrontal cortex is cooked and ready.
But I think people don't recognize that adolescence extends to our early 20s. Mm. And adolescence, by definition, means little death. So anyone who comes through it saying their mental health was great was lucky. Mm. Because the process of the death of your childhood, right, and that moving into adulthood, if it's not painful, then you haven't transitioned into that next stage. So I often wish that we taught young people to expect and be prepared for the, and especially if you're an artist, you're more sensitive, that all of that's normal. Mm. And if you couldn't, if we warned you, how much differently would your adolescence have been? Mm-hmm. Because you would not have seen yourself as having issues, but actually growing up. Anyway, side note. And how was your mental health journey, and how has music played into that? It's the first time I caught you.
Good. I think there were, like, some times, like, I kind of started playing guitar, like, freshman year of college, you know. Before that, I was more in, like, the musical theater scene, and getting into college and becoming an adult for the first time, and figuring out what I really wanted, like, was totally hard. You know, people always say that, like, your 20s are for, like, having fun and rock and roll. I wish someone would have told me what you just told me.
You needed to know me instead. Right
now. And I'm never going back. But I feel like I learned guitar pretty quick, because when I was, you know, going through the thick of it, my mom would always say, like, okay, if you need a break, pick up an instrument. Don't, like, try not to, like, go towards the TV or a screen. Just like, if you need a mental break, pick up the guitar for a little bit. And
what a smart mom.
Oh, yeah, she is my everything.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But I can just recall, like, countless hours of me practicing guitar in my parents' room, which was so healing, and so grateful for my parents that they never told me to quiet down or anything like that. They were always just, like, sitting out the door, no matter how bad I was, and I was bad.
But you know, parents, whatever our children do is magic, so there is no level of bad.
My mom, famously, whenever one of us will cook a meal, she'll have the meal in front of her, and she'll be like, haven't taken a bite yet. This is so good. Oh, God, this is just scrumptious. But, so if, you know, your 20s were supposedly to be for partying and having fun, what is the alternative? What would you say our 20s are for?
Growing, developing, exploring who you are, your beliefs, developing your value system, doing hard things. You know, you're creating the foundation for your entire existence. So it should be intentional. Mm-hmm. It should be of service.
Yeah. By the time we get to 30, like, are we out of that growth phase? Is growth constant?
Growth is constant, but it's a different growth, because your 20s are the first time you're growing for yourself. The rest of your life, you're growing in the image of your parents, and then you're growing in the image of your peer group, and you're growing in the image of your public education or what your education experience is. So it's not until your 20s where, you know, you graduate and everyone goes, okay, enjoy your life, and you're like, what? What? You're 22? And so you are the image of all those things. And 22 to 30 is when you finally then parse together all that information and go, and I'm in there. And I need to start awakening those things that are me. And then it's all kind of glorious explorations, because your 20s are really hard. Really, really hard. And then your 30s, usually you're, you know, starting a family or settling the roots. You know, Carl Jung said, until you're 56, you're developing your external reality. You're building community, you're building relationship, you're building your career, you're building those things that externally support you. And then in your 50s, you have that all set, and that's when you do the internal work. But prior to that, it's all the building of your external support system. Again, another thing we don't tell people.
Yeah.
That there is intentionality into the developmental process. And I always warn my students, don't chase a passion. Don't think you're looking for your bliss. Don't think you're looking for your soulmate. You're supposed to be building the foundations of who you are so that you draw to yourself the quality of people and a life that you deserve. And that requires intentionality. We're not searching and only doing the things that give us bliss. We don't spend our life being stoned.
Don't look at me like that.
You started it on stage.
I was just being honest.
Okay, I'm just being honest.
But the moral of the song was that I'm not addicted anymore.
But here's another great giant, right, lie of our culture.
Yeah.
That we legalize something that...
Oh, no, exactly. I think about this all the time. You know, I feel like my parents' generation, like, really got sold cigarettes. That it was something that was fun and cool.
And our grandparents.
Relaxed, too. Yeah. Yes,
the doctor exactly. smoked.
And when I was 18, like, cannabis was legalized, and I got my medical card for anxiety.
Of course.
And I was like, incredible, this thing that's gonna make my anxiety so much better. And then, like, a zillion panic attacks later, I have, like, a cannabis addiction. You know what I mean?
Because you had the opposite reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't serve you. Okay, I'm gonna ask you some personal things. Yeah. As if I haven't already.
Okay, let's get deep.
Now we get deep. What is it like to be a gay couple in 2025 at this moment, and has it been something that you've had to even think about?
Wow. I have thoughts, but like, do you...
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's hard, like, it's hard to say much on this, I feel like, because there have been so many previous generations that have just been, you mm-hmm. know, had to deal with so much more, everything than we have, and in that sense, like, it's been very and especially in the communities that we're in, like, we're in California, and we go, you know, we're at Live Oak Music Festival and Oregon Country Fair and all of these amazing communities on the West Coast, and that feels like a blessing for us. Mm-hmm. And I didn't grow up anywhere other than California, and that's I was very lucky for that. I've had a, you know, beautiful experience with that, and it's very wonderful to be able to be so free on stage and express that on stage to so many people. It's like jumping into a cold lake. It's very sobering, and it really reminds yourself of who you are. Reminds me of who I am.
Yeah. Like, we're super safe in our communities, which is why, like, starting the band and, like, starting to post stuff and starting to do gigs was really easy. There, like, was never a moment that we were scared to be ourselves mm-hmm. on stage. But it has surprised us since, like, if we find the wrong community, if the algorithm on Instagram takes us somewhere else, it's surprising how much people will shoot it down. You know, when we had one video that went viral in a Smith's subreddit,
yeah.
and we got torn to shreds with homophobic comments.
Really?
Yeah. And it was sort of the first time we had...
Really, we're the Smiths of all bands.
Yeah. And, like, we got, like, death threats from that video, super random, which was, like, shocking to us because it was unlike anything we had experienced up until that point. But if anything, it was kind of an indicator that, like, okay, this is the right thing to do, mm-hmm. to, like, continue to pursue this so casually as if we are just, like, any other couple, you know, mm-hmm. because our communities will, like, rally behind us, I hope.
Yes.
And I think those other ones are few and far between.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting, and I don't know if it was just because it was Live Oak, but your stage presence or presentation is very much as a happy, successful gay couple,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and that makes music together, mm-hmm. and clearly that's intentional.
Yeah,
that you've thought absolutely. That through, because you could just get up on stage and be a duo. You could be Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. Simon and Gay Funkel.
Right. But people would not question or you know, make it part of the story. It's just, you're a duo.
No. Yeah.
So why exactly. Why the intentionality to make that part of the story?
Oh, I mean, so much has come from it. I don't remember, like, when the first decision happened, but even at Live Oak, for example, after our first show
on the Hotlick stage, you know, it was 8 a.m. on a Sunday morning. We weren't expecting a ton of people to come. But suddenly, this coalition of queer people who also grew up at Live Oak filled the set. And we are still friends with those people today because we didn't know that that queer community existed here. But if you're loud enough, if you say that, like, we are a safe space, come as you are, people are hungry for
they're
a space like
that.
That.
Yeah,
exactly. And so we've just made too many friends to stop.
And it's also, like, I don't think, like, looking at us on stage and singing, we have this way of singing where we have, like, a ribbon microphone and we sing in both sides of the microphone towards each other. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's just how we rehearse, and that's the best way we perform. And it looks very intimate.
It's very
and
sensual.
So even if we didn't mention that we were together, I think it would be pretty obvious pretty quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
So mentioning it is just a way to clear the air of what, I mean, just
yeah,
tell people what they
thinking.
Already know. Yeah, exactly.
We know what you're thinking, yeah. And you're right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So, last question. Mm-hmm. I have 1,000 questions, but my last question at this moment. Does the music require the relationship?
I don't think so.
We've talked about this before.
Okay.
But who knows?
Yeah. Like, we have zero intention of breaking up romantically at all. Yeah. But, like, in our trying times, we've talked about it. Like, you know, like, let's say good things keep happening to us,
mm-hmm.
and someone books us at another festival and another thing.
We get signed or something.
We get
a contract
signed,
to fulfill.
There's an album coming out. Yeah. Like there would always be another thing, you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, maybe if, like, good things weren't happening, there, like, would be a reason to, like, easily, like, break up if we wanted to. But when we were talking about it like that, it was like, let's not, like, make this relationship dependent on the music. Mm-hmm. Like, let's let them live separately if they want to. And we decided that, like, you know, if we did ever break up romantically, that, like, we would try to stick together and see how it was.
Be the White Stripes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Exactly. I think Fleetwood Mac.
That was the obvious one. I wanted to pull deep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We covered all of our bases.
Also because Jack White took Meg's last name, and I always love that, too.
Oh, I didn't know that. Did they pretend they were brother and sister early on, too?
That I did know.
Oh,
they thought they were the Carpenters?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's funny. But, yeah, I wonder... Yeah, it's like... Because we would be great artists separately, too. And so, like, it's not like we need each other to make our own art, you know?
Totally.
And I think that helps, you know?
But it's just so fun.
It is. No, that's what... it happens
fun.
Naturally.
And it's fun to watch.
It happens naturally.
Thank
right?
you.
It makes the audience feel comfortable because you're having such a great time that I think the audience relaxes and are able to take in the music. Have you ever noticed that? You know, when you watch people perform, sometimes, maybe it's just me, I get a little anxious for them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally.
And so then I'm not really enjoying it because I'm nervous for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you can do it.
Yes.
yeah, exactly.
Yes. But I feel like I need to cheer really loud. But the two of you make it very comfortable to be in the audience.
Thanks.
It's also comfortable for us in those situations, too, because, like, you know, if when we've had not great shows... we come away from those shows having shared that experience, and that's
yes,
so helpful.
Yeah, we literally walk away arm in arm, being like, "Thank God I have someone."
Yeah,
to
I was like, "That sucked, right?" Yeah,
we can process
like,
it together.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I think, like, you know, one of our, like, first gigs, I made some sort of joke about, like, feeling really anxious in the moment. I was just, like, honest about it and said it, and it totally unlocked something within us where we were just, like, honest with our audience, and then we suddenly got really chatty, and we were talking the whole time to our audience, and the show just got fun, and now we can't do it any other way.
No, I love that. I love a storyteller up on stage. It brings me into their process.
Yeah. Thanks.
I love that. All right, Liam and Ross, thank you so much for spending this hour with me.
Thank you.
I appreciate you both. Any final thoughts, things you would like people to know? What's coming up for you? How can they find your music? How can they find you?
We've got Murphy Wild on Spotify and all streaming services.
And our website, murphywild.com.
And that's W-Y-L-D-E.
Yep. W-Y-L-D-E.
Yeah, I've
appreciated it. Here on Central Coast Public Radio.
What station have you been chatting with?
KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio.
Thank you.
KCBX Central Coast Public Radio.
Yeah, nice voices.
Nice. Woo! Love y'all. Bye. Thank you.
You've been listening to Murphy Wild, sharing their story and music backstage at Live Oak 2025. And we're going to close the show today with a song that they performed for the Live Oak audience, and they recently recorded to be released in the next couple of months. So you can look forward to more Murphy Wild music coming very soon. You can look for them on Instagram and TikTok at Murphy Wild, and that's Wild, W-Y-L-D-E. They have promised to revamp their website and should be up in a few weeks, murphywild.com. Until then, here is Another Version of You by Murphy Wild. Thank you for tuning in and supporting Central Coast Public Radio KCBX. Look forward to seeing you at Live Oak 2026.
A silhouette's a lonesome thing to see. I never get to meet the eyes. Something else has captured you. A passing thought or a pretty view. I'd swear you were made for me. Dry like an island that you're passing by. Give it a breath of silence, leave it alone. Takes attention from a friend to show it. You'd be happier alone, I know it. To prove there's another version of you. Takes attention from a friend to show it.